Okay, I'm John Davidson. This is Active Outdoors Podcast. I'm sitting on the banks of the Feshy here with Colin Cadden, who is a volunteer with ScotWays, formerly the Scottish Rights of Way Society. That might still be the Sunday title. I don't know.
Officially, it will still be the title somewhere.
So, we're talking about this basically because there's a new edition of their kind of book, Scottish Hill Tracks, which is coming up to its sixth edition. So Colin's been volunteering with them for a number of years, just keeping an eye on their rights of way and making sure everything's in order. So just wonder, Colin, you can tell us a bit about the role, your voluntary role with ScotWays, and what you kind of do for them.
Yeah, so I'm lucky. I sort of venture into the outdoors quite a lot, so a lot of the local rights of way I pass by, I'm either walking, running or cycling, so mostly it's keeping an eye on those to make sure they're clear, signage is okay, you know, there's no obstructions, these sorts of things. And obviously they do change over time, so then it's a question of feeding some of that back to the access officer, a guy called Neil Birch, who basically looks after all the volunteers. So mostly I do stuff when I'm out and about. I don't necessarily follow any guidance, you know, so that's how it works.
Yeah, so you just kind of out on your bike or on foot, and just kind of when you notice things, you take a note or whatever.
Yeah, it's basically just recording it all as I go. So, you know, nowadays you've always got your phone on you, so you've got a camera. You can find out where everything is. You've got mapping. So, just record everything you can if there's any changes, and feed it back mostly. And then occasionally, I will get given, there'll be published a list of tasks that are available to be carried out by volunteers, and they could be all around the country. Typically, I'll see if there's any in my local area and then go off to have a look at them. And that could be putting new signs up. In fact, there's one needed down here in Feshy, which is in the locality now, and we now need to just get it installed. It was the old sign was knocked down during Storm Gerrit, completely flattened by some trees. It was in need of some repair anyway, it has to be said. So occasionally I've got other tasks like that that need done. But mostly it's wandering around the area and just keep my eyes open.
I guess a lot of people who aren't like us and kind of involved to some extent with ScotWays don't maybe know the little green signs you see everywhere around the country. They're basically rights of way signs that have been put by ScotWays for over a century, really.
Yeah, and these are the bits that have always fascinated me. Even now, if I'm driving along somewhere and I see one of these, my thoughts are immediately, oh, I haven't been on that. Where does that go? What is it going to be like? So it's like a magnet. You know, my wife hates me for it, you know. But it's like, oh, I wonder where that's going. So I'll have to add that to my plan to go there and see where that goes. So they've always fascinated me since before I started volunteering. It's always been, oh, where does that go? And they always seem like they're going, it could be somewhere really remote. You know, if it's somewhere that says, oh, you know, right away to Tom Doon, 26 miles, you go, 26 miles? Wow, what's that going to be like? So I need to do these, you know.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that. People take the mick at me for the number of pictures I've got of the signs and pictures of the same signs over and over again. I guess some of those long routes are really, they do go into quite remote bits of the country as well. You know, you need to be prepared, don't you, to kind of take a lot of them on.
Yeah, I mean, mostly they're decent tracks, and the Hill Track book helps because it gives you an indication of what sort of terrain you might be facing mostly. So I do bike a lot of them when I can. Obviously, it gets you over everything quicker. And if it's a long route and you need to work your way back again via another long route, then the biking helps. So in the Cairngorms, the likes of the Minigaig, the Gaig, and these tracks are all pretty accessible on a bike, you know. There have been some others I've done. There's one in particular runs from near Dalwhinnie to near Laggan, and there's the green sign, and underneath it there's another green sign, which, and I'm paraphrasing, but it basically says, don't expect there to be a track here. There's a direction that you're following, you know, and so map reading helps. And just looking at where the, how reading the land a bit helps as well. But that's a classic of, there isn't a track. You know, you don't take a bike on these ones. That's definitely an on-foot job, you know.
You mentioned the new book there. This is, I think I'm right in saying it's 100 years since they first published a book of this type. I think it had a slightly different title in 1924. But this is going to be the sixth edition. And by the sounds of it, they've made a few changes to the kind of style of it. It's a bit more kind of, you know, kind of maps for each route and things like that. So it sounds like they've put quite a lot of work into it over the last few years.
Yeah, well, it's been, I think it's 4 years I've been involved in it. Because, of course, COVID happened, which restricted our availability to go out and actually survey these paths. And then things just take a long time. And they are remote, a lot of the tracks, and then you're looking to get people to survey places that... I mean, I said I'm lucky, because most of the ones I did all of Section 17, and that's all local-ish to me. But there were some tracks in the middle of nowhere that, you know, won't see much footfall, and people really having to go out their way. And then various issues about editing and printing and all that all take their time. So it's a long, long-term project, 4 years. So it's basically 4 years late.
How you feel, you know. So you
can build a ferry in that time.
Not in Scotland, sure. I guess some of these kind of, when you're doing a book and you're checking the full route through, is that taking a bit longer than just checking little bits, bit by bit, that you would normally do? Is it a bit more of a task for you?
Yeah, we were lucky and we were able to get an extract of what's recorded at Scotways. So for any route I was actually given what's currently on record. And there's a lot more detail in there than even appears in the book, because obviously the book is out of date already, so there will have been updates to that. So you did have a record before you went, and I would take that with me. So then it was a question of recording the changes, editing text, you know, and sometimes it'd be track conditions or there's a bridge not there or these sorts of things as well. But the records are pretty good, and I think as long as people are feeding in those little bits as we go, the records long term should be better for the seventh edition whenever that, which will be well after my time, I'm sure. You know.
I think I quite like these books. They're not a kind of traditional guidebook, are they? They're a kind of a vague, well, not vague, a quite, you know, a description of the route, gives you a distance and the kind of maps you need, and grid references to start and finish. But it's not a kind of step by step guide of how to get there. You need a map and you need to kind of do a bit of planning for a lot of them, don't you?
Yeah, the danger is you take some of the adventure away, I think, if it's too detailed. I mean, and I've made that mistake myself. If I'm going somewhere that I don't know, you end up, you look at all the guidebooks, you look at what people have written, now you're on YouTube, you're seeing people's videos off the route. There's a site called Geograph, which has got photographs of every grid square in the UK, so you can go in and see what tracks are like. And it's great if you want to prepare, and there is, there's a safety aspect in that, but you are taking away some of the fun of discovering. And so the book is quite good, and it doesn't take quite that level of detail. Yeah, like you say, you know, go here, go to this grid, go to this grid reference. It's not telling you much about what's in the middle, which is great, which is the way it should work.
I think we're still waiting on the final details of when the book's going to be published, but it's at the printers now, so it should be out fairly soon, in the next month or 6 weeks, I think, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I did say that the later this year it's published, the more likelihood is that all my friends will be getting a copy for Christmas.
I will not tell them that. And the last thing I wanted to speak to you about was just the role of Scotways. I mean, it's 179 years old, I think, this year. It had its 175th big celebration in COVID, which kind of, you know, put paid to a few of the things they had planned. But it's been going on for so long, and obviously started out to kind of open up rights of way. But can you say something about how it's still relevant today, where we have among the best access rights in the world here?
Well, yeah, we do have among the best access rights, but I don't want to put too strongly, but they are under threat in various locations. So for various reasons, and many well-intentioned, many not, maybe not so much. People do want to restrict access, and you can think of various estates where they would like to completely shut off public access, you know, and don't need to mention any. But so it remains a key way of recording things and having a body that's going to fight for some of these things for us, you know. And there are legal aspects to some of this as well. And I can't really think of anyone else who is best placed to do that. The local authorities, well-intentioned though they may be, are often under-resourced for, you know, there are cost implications. ScotWays, it's a charity, so it's not like they've got a lot of money, but they can take things away and lead them and lead the case long term, you know, in some cases.
They have kind of taken legal challenges, haven't they?
Yeah, there have been a few. And indeed, oh, the history of it, you know, if you go back to Glen Tilt and these places where ScotWays were involved, you know. So it is key for some of that, and even today, you know, around this area, there are, for instance, there are wind farms everywhere, and there are occasions where that will restrict access, but sometimes actually can improve it. So there's a balance. Sometimes you go, you know, okay, there's going to be a new big road going up here. That's not very great, but then you think, yeah, but now we've got access to all that, and you'll see how. Old routes become realigned when things happen. So recording all of that actually becomes pretty key, I think. Yeah. Remains key.
Yeah, kind of historic changes as well.
Yeah.
Great. Well, it's fascinating to speak to you, Colin. Thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
And, yeah, we'll go and wander back along the fishing now.
Get your orders in now.
Colin Cadden from Aviemore there, a volunteer with ScotWays, and the book Hill Tracks in Scotland, the 6th edition, is out this Monday, September the 30th, or if you're listening after Sunday, it's out now. You can order it directly from ScotWays at www.scotways.com or buy it from any good bookshop. Thanks for listening to the Active Outdoors podcast. Next time I'm going to be reflecting on the Loch Ness 24 event, which I took part in along with my wife Meg. She's running the Baxter's Loch Ness Marathon this weekend too, so good luck to Meg, you can do it. And good luck to everyone else taking part as well. It's a great event down at the Buckton Inverness, and I'm looking forward to cheering everybody on at the finish line. Until next time, enjoy your adventures, and please subscribe to the podcast and share it far and wide.